I have a question for you, Shayna.
Go for it, Chris.
Lemon or chocolate?
Chocolate.
How about both?
You know, I've never been a fruit and chocolate person.
I didn't mean at the same time. I just meant beyond the binary.
That's probably not a place where I'm going to exercise my beyond binariness. Welcome to What in God's Name. He's Chris Owen.
And she is Shayna Appel.
You've tuned into the podcast that is taking a look at contemporary issues through the lenses of theology and philosophy, getting us a little past the binary of politics and economics, which is where so much of our public conversation rests these days. Right, Chris?
That is so.
We've got a great show lined up for you today. We're excited today as we are starting to prepare for next week's Wine with Wine that will feature Jackie Davis. Wine, W-I-N-E, with wine, W-I-G-N. That was Chris's take on, I pronounce it Wigan, he pronounces it wine. Just another point of disagreement on our parts. But we hope you'll tune in because it's going to be a gas.
Wine with Wine webinar on Wednesday.
Oh, man. Okay. Chris has hit a hyper level of Chris-ness in the middle of this pandemic. He's obviously spending a little too much time isolated.
The title of our webinar is Healing Community Through Circus Arts with Jackie Davis, who is a gifted educator and a gifted circus performer. She studied with Marcel Marceau.
Yeah, she's super talented in the way that you can't teach. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's just got gifts, the kinds of gifts that you cannot, I don't think you can teach. I don't think you can impart. I think just her whole personality is so well suited to working with kids in, you know, to do this in a circus environment.
She is she's just fun to talk to.
Yeah.
So we're going to have fun on the evening of September 30th, 7 o'clock. And to get the link to join the webinar, I've made it really simple. All you need to do is go to our website, whatingods.com, which is whatingods.com, and you will see on the landing page, there is a button. The button says, Wine with Wine.
That is easy.
Touch the button. Well, put your little cursor thing and click.
Touch the button. We're going to have all these people like hitting their screens with, hey, Chris. Oh, God. Okay.
And you will receive a link to the webinar. I did also want to mention briefly that What in God's Name is going to run a marathon on behalf of Project Home, and I'll be coming forward with more details about that after we get past the webinar. But I did want to say Project Home is a nonprofit here in New Hampshire that supports asylum-seeking families. Shayna is going to spin the spinny wheel today. I did want to say the spinny wheel is a bicycle wheel. It has a sprinkler head as a pointer.
You really,
it's mounted
on some
plywood.
You just have to go to the webpage and take a look at the picture because the thing really defines explanation.
And it's got a card in the spokes to make the noise. Here we go. What do we got, Shayna? Technical difficulties, my handwriting.
Now, Chris will interpret.
Things that our show rejects. We reject the notion that politics is foundational.
Well, that'll work well with today's show.
Of course it does. So the spinny wheel does not lie.
Never. So, as I'm sure all of you out there have been focused on thinking about, listening to reports on the passing of our beloved Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and the push by the Republican Senate and the current occupant to fill that seat as soon as possible. And when I got the news on Friday, I immediately texted you, Chris, and I was like, oh my God, we are a word I can't say on a podcast. I can't even say it on a podcast, and that's going a distance. But basically, we are so screwed.
Why do you think we're screwed?
I think we're screwed because they're going to ramrod some conservative justice down our throats, and that person won't be adequately vetted, and it won't really matter what is found during the vetting anyway, because the Republican Party seems to lack any integrity whatsoever. So, yeah, I think we're screwed. I think another conservative judge on the bench, particularly if you are, let's say, a transgendered person, is really, really going to be a dangerous prospect for you. If you're anybody in the LGBT movement, it's going to be a scary prospect for you. And as to how that will play out in other matters vis-a-vis current state of race relations in the country, the value of the collective over and above the individual, all of that's going to play out in ways that I don't think are going to be toward, certainly not going to reflect my values or my hopes for this country. Why do you think we're not?
Why do you assume that I think we're not?
I don't know. I just had a sneaking suspicion.
I think we are screwed, but for different reasons.
Okay, go for it.
But I don't want to go there yet. I would like to put up a word of caution. I think the easy analysis is, and we get this a lot in the mainstream media, a justice appointed by a Republican is conservative and therefore from the liberal side bad, and a justice nominated by a liberal is therefore also a liberal and will judge liberally and is from a conservative side bad. I just don't think it's as simple as that.
Well, we've seen that this summer. We've seen Trump appointees.
Exactly. So that was my first, first example, which would be Gorsuch's decision on whatever case that was. Hi, it's Chris. I'm stepping in here in the edit to clarify what Justice Gorsuch did. Justice Gorsuch ruled and wrote the opinion in a case this summer that Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act did, in fact, protect LGBTQ people today from employment discrimination. Now, back to the show. And the second thing is, I was thinking of this. The most libertarian outlier on the court is Justice Thomas, nominated by one of the most moderate Republicans in our memory, HW. So there's not a perfect alignment of who nominates and how they judge.
So are you suggesting we have to get past the binary?
Indeed, I am.
Republican bad, Democrat good? Okay. All right.
I'm also suggesting that at least in this moment, the Supreme Court is still, maybe I'm naive, but is still a place where there is thoughtfulness, regardless of, and intellectual integrity, no matter which side of the supposed binary they're to be on. I still have faith
and
trust.
My fear is to that point exactly, that, because I agree, the Supreme Court, it feels to me as if, in much the same way as, you know, I don't know if you experienced this when you were ordained, you know, once you become a minister, like, there's an internal shift that happens. I mean, I can't, you know, if somebody ticks me off on the road, I can't just flip them the bird, because, you know, somebody's going to talk to my board president and say, hey, I think your minister flipped me off the other. You know, that's an extreme example, but obviously there's just lots of stuff that we have to, I feel, bound by the ordination to a tradition of ministers whose integrity I feel compelled to uphold. I think the Supreme Court has had that, you know, moving beyond the political to, you know, just where do we locate integrity today? Where do we locate integrity in this system? Because, you know, when we were kind of chatting online a little bit on Friday, we had sort of already jumped past the political into the theological. And I was just thinking about, you know, the implications of raw power. I was thinking about the society that Jesus was born into.
Of course you were thinking about raw power, because I was too, and we were telepathically connected once again.
Excellent. Yeah, so that's, I was thinking about raw, unchecked power that now understands it can do whatever the hell it damn well wants. And if there is a place that it can't go, and it may have come up against that when Trump tried to activate the military to put down the peaceful demonstrations that were happening after Mr. George Floyd's murder. You know, and the military kind of stepped back and said, yep, nope, that's not. I mean, but they came close to saying yes. And there was, I can't remember his name now, but I know there was a general who was out there in the square with Trump. So, you know, we came preciously close to, and then he stepped back and said, I should not have been there. I shouldn't have had anything to do with that. So, you know, so they may have hit a boundary, but at least everything on the south side of that boundary is fair game. And the pieces of scripture that, you know, have been coming through my mind all have to do with, you know, they're all pieces of integrity. I mean, it's like, seriously, like, have you no shame? This is not like we don't have you on tape 4 years ago spinning the exact opposite. And basically what they're saying, basically what Republicans are saying, it doesn't matter. And this goes to what you were saying last week, which is that this kind of BS has become, you know, this is Love Island. This is The Bachelor. This is Survivor. This is, you know, this has become entertainment now.
Let's get back to raw power, which you raised and I wanted to go with. As I said, I think you nailed it. There is not principle involved. It's we have power. We can do this. We will do this. Speaking of the Senate Republicans, this is related to factionalism, I think. And I want to say a little bit more about that. So when George Washington left office in 1796, he said this, and it's, of course, late 18th century prose, so we'll need to do a little bit of picking this apart. He said this, "The alternate domination of one faction over another, the alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural to party dissension, which in different ages and countries has perpetrated the most horrid enormities, is itself a frightful despotism." So the main sentence, stripped of all its phrases, is the alternate domination of one faction over another is itself a frightful despotism.
Nailed it.
This is where we are.
This is absolutely where we are. And, you know, I found myself even thinking, because, you know, I've said for a long time, my prophecy was that the Republicans were going to get routed in this election, and I still believe it's true. I believe that when the dust settles on this thing, and there may be a civil war before the dust settles on this thing, but the Democrats are going to walk away with the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. And I still believe that's true. But that having been said, if that were to happen, man, I will be the first person down in D.C. to stare these people down, to stare these Democrats down and say, and don't you dare, now take office and behave with the same reprehensible BS attitudes and behaviors that we just emptied the swamp of. Because if you do, I swear to God, I will never turn out for another election. And basically, I don't care who the hell wins.
So this is a theological reflection of what's going on in our body politic. That's how I interpret it, what you've just said, which is that if we get caught in the cycle of revenge and retribution, we're screwed. And that's getting back to how you started. When you said this Supreme Court justice moment, we're screwed, I agree, but I think it's for this reason.
It is. It's not a Democratic reason or a Republican reason. It is simply, you know, the wielding of raw power. You know, somebody, who was it said, absolute power corrupts absolutely. I mean, I think I've said this on the show before. The fact that there were Republican representatives who took an oath, who swore to do everything they could to ensure that Obama was a one-term president, in my humble opinion, was sedition. Because they took an oath before that, which was to uphold and defend the Constitution. And I think the latter ended up trumping the former.
That is an element of factionalism. Factionalism says, my piece, my angle on what is good and true is the whole picture.
Yeah.
So you have this element of a faction saying or believing that they are saving the nation from moral relativism.
Moral relativism.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
From godlessness, from socialism.
And as if there is no other part. And I remember exactly. a letter Paul wrote to a church that was having that very same factionalism. And what did he say? The eye can't say, you know, to the foot, you're not needed. There is one body, there are many parts, and y'all are going to have to figure out how to work together.
Yeah, so that's the insight that draws from Christianity has to offer.
Well, it's not just Christianity. In fact, it's all the world's great religions, which at their core are created around the question, how shall we live together?
Right. And to take it out of the theological, I mean, that was the vision of the founding and why Washington was so wary of and warned us of faction. So there's this idea, this epistemological pride that my faction has the insight, the fast track, the inside lane to what is good and true, and everybody else then can be treated with contempt. And the problem is, there are many problems. You've cited one. Another is, they're destroying the society that they claim to be saving by acting in this manner. It's like, think of diseases that are autoimmune diseases, where the immune system goes out of whack. Like the immune system that is supposed to protect the body and make the body whole and well and heal it gets too activated and ends up harming the body. I feel like that is the analogy. That's what I'm looking for, is this whole sense. Those who think they are saving the nation at this moment by rushing through, doing this with the court, whatever way else. I mean, it doesn't just happen with Ruth Bader Ginsburg's seat.
Is it even about saving the nation? Because, or
I think
is it about the Republicans trying to energize their base?
Well, I think...
I mean, is it political or is it actually... I mean, because there's a part of me that would say, God, if they thought this was really seriously in the best, you know, interest of the nation, but I don't see that integrity there. I don't see any...
I think they're connected, Shana. I think... It's the only way to justify.
How is it good for the nation if I say one thing 4 years ago and I say a completely different thing now?
It's not in reality, but to justify your own behavior. Like, they know they're flip-flopping. They're not unaware of it. The only way you can then justify that to yourself is to say, I'm on the right side. So it's end justifies the means. I'm going to exercise my power in whatever way I want to, even if it's inconsistent or unprincipled, because my faction has the road to saving us.
And so
anything I do is justified.
And so here's where I'll lean back on you again, because I think any element of that which is good for the country left the halls a long time ago, and that now this is just about raw power. It's about why you're doing it, because we can. We're going to do this because we can, because this may be our last, you know, exercise of raw power. And that's what it feels like to me. It doesn't feel like it's got anyone's best interest at heart. I think, you know, look, you serve the United States Senate. You don't know how divided this nation is. That would be a newsflash for you. You don't think that doing this is going to deepen that divide? Of course it is, but you don't give a shit. So please help me understand how what you're doing is in the best interest of the nation, which is tearing itself apart right now. That's the part I don't get.
I don't disagree that that could be a possibility, that we've come to such a nihilistic point that anything said about the good of the nation is just...
It's window dressing.
Window dressing to... the seeking for and the wielding of power. So what's the alternative to faction and power for the sake of power? I would suggest, well, there's more than one answer, but here's one. Rediscovering the spirit of compromise. That would involve remembering something which we've talked about a lot, which is something bigger outside of ourselves that we all answer to. It leads to, among other things, a sense of humility, because the faction then can no longer say, we know we have the complete view as to what is good and true, and therefore we are justified in using power in whatever way possible. If there's some higher good, let's say, let's call it, the Constitution of the United States.
Well, that's where I was going. Okay. Where I'm thinking.
And I mean, in a secular, as in neutral, public sphere, we can't go to the higher power of religion because not everybody's religious.
But the aspiration contained within the Constitution, the aspiration of America, the idea of America, the dream of America is bigger than all of us.
It's bigger than one faction. And that is why the framers were always so protective of the minority voice. The responsibility of the majority is to keep in mind the minority, not to produce a system where the minority gets steamrolled.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things we use a lot in, you know, more religious or faith-oriented polity or governance, right, is you make a decision, right? You choose a way forward, and then you go forward, and then at some point you stop and you reflect. You know, honestly, a fearless and searching moral inventory. What have we accomplished? Is this what we intended? Who is no longer at the table and why? You know, that these are all questions that if we are going to be the America, you know, if we are ever going to be the America that was the dream, then we are going to have to learn to move that way. And the, you know, before we're Democrats or Republicans, we're Americans, and that party relies, I mean, that nation relies on a two-party system. A two-party system checking and balancing the other.
And it relies on those who are currently in power, at times, exercising restraint.
Yes.
I want to stop my side of today's show by quoting Danielle Allen. She says, compromise is what allows us to stay together in the space that we share. Discard it, discard compromise, and we're all condemned to our own private Bosnias.
Mm.
The goal is not unanimity. That is neither achievable nor desirable. Compromise entails embracing not Mitch McConnell's outlook, which is, the winners make policy and the losers go home. That's mm-hmm. a direct quote from Mitch McConnell.
Mm-hmm.
The winners make policy and the losers go home. So compromise entails embracing not that outlook, but rather the view that the winners deserve a leadership role in steering the conversation toward the wholesome plans. That's in quotation marks because it's a phrase that Washington, George Washington, used. Wholesome plans of the whole. So that's
the responsibility.
That's her take on compromise.
Wait, before you drop your pile, there's on the very back page, there's an American flag. Underneath that, there was a quote I saw by Abraham Lincoln.
So Shada saw this in my pile of papers. It's a quotation from Abraham Lincoln. If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author. You got a takeaway for us?
That's it. I mean, I'm not going to try to top old Abe. You know, it is a matter of leaders who cannot or will not take responsibility for the state of the nation. Yeah, as a whole. Are worthless to us. Worse, they're despots.
That was Washington's warning.
Yeah.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light. Go to our website, whatingods.com. There you can sign up. You can press the button. I mean, click the button. To get to Wine with Wine, our webinar, Wednesday webinar,
Live webinar.
Live webinar next Wednesday with Jackie Davis. So whatingods.com, which is
whatingods. Chris, that webinar is going to be live, but it's also going to be recorded, right? So if people can't join us next Wednesday at 7 o'clock, they'll be able to find it on our website.
That is so.
Just checking.
Great to see you.
Always good to see you, Chris.